On today's episode of The Good Word, Dan Titus joins us to discuss the Minnesota Timberwolves and their bad vibes and what they're doing to change it, the New York Knicks and the Minutes Police, and Ice Young joins us to talk about Kawhi Leonard and his return to the LA Clippers. All that and much more coming up on today's episode. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter, Yahoo Sports. Before we get into the show, a couple of bits of business to get into. If you haven't already, please check out The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube and make sure you leave us a rating and a review wherever you are listening to this audially. It's Goodwill and Friends Wednesday on the pod. Of course, Ice Young will be on later to discuss Kawhi Leonard's return to the Clippers. But first, it's our friend Dan Titus. Dan, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Vinny, how you been?
I've been good, man. It's been a minute. It's the new year, so we were scaling down a little bit in December. I lost my voice in Las Vegas during the in-season turn or NBA Cup, whatever the hell they call that. So we couldn't be potting.
Was that the whiskey?
No, it's called sinus infections.
Ah, yeah.
That's rough. There was one, I won't say her name, but she knows exactly who she is, who was treating me and telling people that I had cooties. It was basically like I had COVID or something like that. And I'm like, no, I just have a sinus infection. I lost my voice. I'm not actually sick. I feel fine. I just can't talk. Like, don't be running around here telling people that I'm contagious or something.
Yeah,
like,
not in Vegas. Come on now.
Especially in Vegas, because I don't even like Vegas like that. But anyway, Dan, I wanted to talk about Minnesota and get your thoughts on them because I saw Minnesota up close on Saturday night against the Pistons in Detroit. And Ant had 53, a career high there. But the vibes just look so bad. They lost that game. They would have lost by 30 if not for Ant, you know, scoring 50 and hitting 10 threes, which, of course, isn't sustainable. But is this as simple as you swap out Julius Randle in place of Karl Anthony Towns in that trade and add Dante DiVincenzo, and all of a sudden everything changes? Was Karl that good of a fit, or is Julius that bad of one?
I think it's probably the latter. I mean, at this point, I feel like we've had, you know, 30-plus game sample size of what the Julius Randle experience is, and Knicks fans know it well. Like, this is a roller coaster ride that's going to have its ups and downs. Now, if you look at the numbers, box score-wise, his efficiency has dropped each month. And I think now, you know, you look at last night's game, they had to put his ass on the bench because he was giving them nothing. And I think now Finch is now starting to realize, like, all right, if we're going to at least be something in the playoffs, we have to figure out the rotation. So I think making the bold move of moving Mike Conley to the bench was a wise decision. It puts the ball in Anthony Edwards' hands. He can be the primary playmaker because Dante DiVincenzo, that's not really his role. He's there for defense. He's there for stretching the floor. But when you put the ball in Ant's hands, good things happen. The offensive explosion, though, in the second half was what really won them that game. I mean, they were down by 19 points at one point. And much of that energy that you were talking about, like the vibes were bad. Like, we were getting that sense again. But then Ant-Man just went superhero mode. And that's what he's going to have to do if this Minnesota team is going to be anything. And I think that there's just way more flaws than there are, you know, positives after this trade was made.
It's almost sad, to be perfectly honest, because you look at the way that the trade was made or why the trade was made. It was made for luxury tax reasons. It was made for second apron reasons. And not to say that the Timberwolves throughout the course of their franchise life has done everything right, because they haven't. But usually when you go throughout the course of, you know, of a year, of a couple of years, and you've positioned yourself to be a team that can go to the Western Conference Finals, and maybe next year, if we keep this all together, then we can elevate and take the next step. And maybe we'll be battling with Oklahoma City. But because of this very restrictive CBA, you have to bring in a player like Julius Randle, who, let's be perfectly honest, Titus, he is a very talented player. He can do a lot of good things, but he only fits in certain spaces. He only fits almost in like a bad team. He can make a bad team better. I don't think he can make a good team better. You know what I mean? I think the defensive lapses, you know, the ball dominance. There was that one play. Do you remember that play against Oklahoma City a couple weeks ago? And I saw it on social media, which of course is the perfect sample size. Might have been Lou Dort guarding him. And Lou Dort kept stripping him. And he would not get off the ball. Like, nothing says getting stripped two or three times, you know what, let me get off the ball, let me reset the offense, let me get it somewhere else so that somebody else can initiate offense. No. He's going to go full bull in China shop. And I feel like that's the Julius Randle experience. And that's one of the big reasons why they are where they are. But I want to ask you this because you said something interesting. You said when they moved Conley to the bench, that's a positive move because it puts Ant on the ball more, has him playing point. Are we sure we want Ant playing point, considering that's inviting the double teams?
I think at this point, Mike Conley is not the player that he once was. And I think we got it. Father Time came for people earlier than some. And I think it came for Mike Conley pretty quick. You know, him providing that spark in the second unit, I think it really helped unlock Naz Reid, which is another area where I think he's kind of had a down year comparatively to last year. You got to have someone get him the rock, too. So I think having that ball handler in the second unit is probably going to be a good thing in the long run if they continue to trot out this starting group, because they just need to raise their floor. And you got to mix up the rotations here and there. And Mike Conley wasn't maximizing Anthony Edwards and getting everyone else involved. Go to that second unit, run with Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Then maybe you can get a competent bench that can maybe offset some of those woes of the starting lineup when they're not playing well, like last night. I mean, they were lucky to win that game. Like, their defense was great for the most part, but the Clippers just weren't making shots down the stretch. I mean, James Harden shot 8 for 22. Kawhi Leonard only played 20 minutes because he's still on his minutes restriction. That was a game that the Clippers let get away versus the Minnesota Timberwolves actually winning it. I mean, if Ant has to go Superman mode or Ant-Man mode, that's not going to be a recipe for success in the long run. So I think Finch is onto something there. I just don't know how you can get Julius Randle to commit to, being a team player consistently, because that's really what it is. Like, he's just not. That's just not who he is.
It's a weird thing because you look at him and he's an unselfish passer. He's a willing passer. Right. When Ant was going off against Detroit, Julius just got out of the way.
He let him get out.
He just got out of the way. I don't think he got a field goal until midway through maybe the second quarter of that game. And it just feels like it's such an awkward fit for him. He probably wants to do really well. He walked into a team that had championship expectations. He's not Karl Anthony Towns. He's not a 45% three-point shooter with all the myriad talents and everything else. And then he gets there and the vibes almost immediately change. And I don't think that's completely his fault. Like, you can't put this all on one player. Like, you can this is the change, but it's not all on him. It's a lot of other things going on. And don't forget, you got the original Eeyore himself, Rudy Gobert, there. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot happening with this team. And then I wonder, with Rudy, he's a multi-time defensive player of the year. Can we expect him? Should we expect him to continue to defend at such a high historic level, or will time come for him quickly, or has time started to come for him quickly?
I think time's starting to come for him quickly, because I think that's the other piece of this. And I think it's a great point that you brought up, that this isn't all on Julius and him coming into a new situation. I think this is what the Minnesota Timberwolves built for themselves, and they haven't figured out how to effectively guard the paint when Gobert isn't on the floor. But at the same time, he's such an L offensively that it's like just drains the offense. Like, you got to give some space for Randle to be able to create. Let Ant and Randle run the pick and roll. Most of Ant's assists have gone to Julius Randle. So they do have some chemistry there. But Gobert just being a nothing on offense is just, it's just capping the ceiling of what this team can be. So I think more drastic things need to happen. I just don't know what moves can be made at this point when your team is 18 and 17 and you're still having these chemistry issues 30 games into the season. This doesn't sound like they're going to be going back to the Western Conference Finals. And I think that they already made that predetermined decision once they traded Karl Anthony Towns. If this is about the money, now you have the flexibility of wanting to sign Julius Randle back or letting him walk. Now you have some money to make some moves and build around the future that includes Anthony Edwards, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, et cetera.
Yeah, one thing I don't want to see is the most explosive athlete in basketball? Anthony Edwards, he or Ja Morant? Take your pick. I don't want to see him taking 12 threes a night. I don't care if you hit 10 or 15 like he did in Detroit. It was a mature shooting performance. You know what I don't want to see from a 23-year-old athlete? Mature. I want to see reckless. I want to see you dunking on someone. I don't want to see you turn into 32-year-old Kobe Bryant. Yeah. I don't need that. Get your ass down the lane and dunk on someone and yell in their face. I know that's immature of me to say, but I'm not a serious person.
I mean, that's what basketball, I mean, they need that, right? Like, the ratings went up when there were some scraps and some fights. We need to see the more dunks and explosiveness. And I think if you can clear Rudy out the way, I don't know, Naz Reid can be a spot up, a five out player.
Yeah, yeah.
That would open up some things a lot if Rudy's just not standing around being a cone. So, yeah, I think the fit with Anthony Edwards and Gobert is probably the bigger issue, but like, you're kind of stuck for the draft capital that you gave up for that guy.
It's an interest. Look, the CBA is forcing teams. When you look at what's going on in Miami with Jimmy Butler, when you look at Phoenix with Bradley Beal, this collective bargaining agreement is creating a lot of awkward situations between players and franchises. And unintended consequences, I guess, would be too strong of a word, because I feel like the NBA, when they put things in place, new rules into place, they know exactly what the hell they're doing. They know exactly what type of chaos they are creating. They are probably just fine with all of this nonsense, even if it means we won't be going to Minneapolis for the Western Conference Finals. I won't be able to hear Prince, you know, during timeouts and games and everything like that. I may have to have my ass in Oklahoma City. Thanks, NBA. Appreciate you. When we come back with Dan, we're going to talk about the New York Knicks and if real, is that the Menace Police? Back here on A Good Word with Dan Titus. Dan, the Knicks went on this 9-game winning streak, and then they ran into Oklahoma City, who was on a 13-game winning streak. Predictably, the Knicks lost that game. They went to Chicago the next day on the Derrick Rose tribute day and everything else. They had a big lead in that one, lost that one, lost again last night. So that's three losses in a row, and it all looks like they've worn down. I look at minutes per game, and I see Mikal Bridges, number one. Josh Hart, number two. OG Anunoby, number seven.
Karl Anthony Towns is number 12. So, I mean, yeah, the Minutes Police are definitely here. I mean, when you look at the Oklahoma City game, Karl Anthony Towns said after the game he was exhausted down the stretch. Yeah, because Tibbs is playing you crazy minutes. And then, oh, by the way, y'all all played 40 minutes against Oklahoma City and then come around on a back-to-back against the Bulls and play no less than 32. So I think this is the Tibbs problem, always, year after year. Bank on it, he's going to wear his players down. And at this point, I'm like, this is the moment. Like, last year, you overachieved. You made this big splash for Karl Anthony Towns. Your team is humming now. Best probably chance you've had in 20, 30 years to win an NBA championship. Go get some depth or play the guys that you have on your bench to just offset some of these minutes. It's January. You're playing an 82-game season. You got to make it healthy throughout the playoffs. Just play some younger talent. I don't care if it's – I mean, you probably shouldn't be playing Matt Ryan and Landry Shamet. Like, give Diate a chance to play. At this point, give somebody some rest, because these guys are going to wear themselves out like they always do.
Look, you know, Mitchell Robinson isn't there, and we don't know when Mitchell Robinson is going to actually make a debut. We know Mitchell Robinson comes with, you know, the rim protection, but also, man, when is he going to play? Like, when he plays, he's going to get hurt. Like, I get that. Miles McBride had, I think, a hamstring last week. So there are reasons. Jericho Sims might be the most athletic player, but doesn't play as much. And I'm surprised that Tibbs doesn't use a guy like Jericho Sims a little bit more, just because defensively he can fly around the floor. But you said it. Before Karl Towns was their big splash, they traded in all their draft picks for Mikal Bridges, who I think is a good fourth piece. Like, if he's your fourth best player, right, you're probably doing something. I think in Phoenix, he was probably their third best player, which showed maybe Phoenix's limitations once they got to the NBA Finals against Milwaukee. But I think, you know, he's durable. He's not going to complain about minutes. We know Josh Hart isn't going to complain about minutes. But I feel like over the course of an 82-game season, you've got to stretch this out. You've got to be able to play the long game. Maybe this is the fault of Leon Rose in the front office for not building a deeper roster. But in this world that we live in, when we talk about tax aprons and everything else, when you put all your resources to Carl on the max, Bridges on the max, Brunson on the max, you don't have much else in terms of resources to go get 7th and 8th men who can play 30 minutes in a given game on the pinch.
That's right. Yeah. And I think that that's really speaking to what you talked about. Like, Deuce McBride has really been that guy for them as a 6th man. He's been out the last 3 games. Going back, he's missed 9 games this season. They're 5-4 with McBride off the floor. But the games that McBride missed earlier in the season was, you know, that was in November timeframe. So, like, there wasn't really that mileage built up yet. Come look at January, those 3 games that he's missed, the last 3, looks a lot different. Because you're having to give those minutes to those people that, you know, frankly, don't really play that much, or you just run an extremely tight rotation of 6 players, which is just not sustainable in the long run. So at some point, something's got to give. Like the Knicks right now, the Knicks starters have played 200 more minutes than any other lineup in the NBA. Like, if it's about chemistry building, you've proved your point,
right,
Tibbs. Like, right, we got there. They got the like, it's good. But if you look in the fourth quarter, that Knicks lineup, starting lineup, is getting outscored by opponents 5 points per 100 possessions. So that means it's all good until the most important moment of the game where y'all aren't playing as well. So take that as a lesson learned for once in your career and just give an opportunity to more people. Just stretch out the bench a little bit more. You have assets there. Give them some minutes. And we're not talking about a lot of minutes here. You can just give people 10, 15-minute spurts here. But this isn't if you're going to continue to run them out for 40 minutes a night, man, this is going to end all bad for the Knicks in the long run.
Yeah, and they got expectations there. And that's the other part. That's the crazy part about this is there's real expectations in New York. I look at the Eastern Conference, and when you see that the Philadelphia 76ers are all the way down, and you see that your Orlando Magic is dealing with 2 injuries to Paolo Banchero and to Franz Wagner, like, you can afford to mess around and play around with games here because you're probably locked into that third spot. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I don't know if, you know, it's 2.5 games, is a lot of basketball to play. I don't know if there's a huge difference for the Knicks between 3 and 4, other than playing the Boston Celtics in round 2 and avoiding the Boston Celtics, like either way it goes.
Yeah,
but I just feel like they're putting themselves in a spot where they're going to have no margin for error when the playoffs come. Like, I look at the regular season like this, and I'm going to see if you agree with me. You win with 9 guys in the regular season. Essentially, you can have some teams play 10, some in an extreme may play 11. But usually you win with about 9 guys in the regular season. In the playoffs, you win with about 7.5. Usually you win with about 7.5. But those guys got to be fresh because you're playing every other day and the travel isn't there, but you're playing consistently every other day. The problem with the Knicks is they are 1 injury away, 1 Jalen Brunson broken hand, 1 Mikal Bridges injury, 1 Josh Hart from this whole thing blowing up in their faces.
I mean, they're lucky OG's still healthy. OG hasn't been able to stay healthy in any season he's played. So right now you're playing a dangerous game of this war of attrition. And I would think, given all of the amount of money and assets baked into this iteration of the Knicks, you would kind of hedge your bet a little bit and start to, you know, hey, it's January. Let's get a couple minutes to some younger players. I'm not saying you got to call up Tyler Kolek or anything like that.
But
Pacome Dadier is a player that can offset Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, maybe even Josh Hart too. Like, he can play multiple positions. I know he's only 19 years old, and that's like the complete opposite thing that Tom Thibodeau would do.
Right.
At some point, you got to adapt, my dude. Like, you have the opportunity to do something special that no one's done since, when was the last time the Knicks won a championship?
1973, I think.
Yeah. All right. So we wasn't living when this occurred.
No. I know that rolled off my tongue, you know, because like it's an inner nerd in me. It's not because I'm 50 damn years old. Like, don't age me like that. I get it. If my hairline is like this when I turn 50, I have made a deal with the devil, but that is not the case. Now, we talked about the Knicks being bad or struggling a little bit. I want to give a little bit of love to a team that I've had real concerns about early in the season. The Denver Nuggets are now fourth in the West. And I wasn't sure that they would get back here. They've won 4 out of 5. The Russell Westbrook experience has worked out better for them recently than I thought. I thought Russ might have very well just have been done, right? If you'd asked me before the start of the season, who's more cooked, Russ, as in Russell Westbrook, or Russell Wilson, I probably would have said Russell Westbrook. Not because I had confidence in Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh, right? That's just where it was. But he's 14-7-6 since mid-December, and he and Jokic have found something. Are we still concerned about the Denver Nuggets, or is this just a good vibes, good moment portion of the season for them?
Yeah, I think it's a good vibes, good moment portion of the season. Nikola Jokic just continues to defy any kind of, you just can't fathom or put any kind of number on how valuable this guy is to this team. And if he's playing at this level, you know, leading the league in 3-point percentage, like what? On top of, you know, averaging a triple-double, I think it just speaks to like Russ's adaptability. It hasn't worked in every situation, but this man has been on several different teams now. And for him to play with Jokic and have this resurgence in his career, I think it's pretty special. But at the same time, I'm also being realistic. Jamal Murray has not played particularly well, and they just re-signed him for a massive extension. And if he doesn't be return to the Jamal Murray of old, this team is not going to make a deep playoff run. Like this, can they have a great regular season record? Absolutely. But when it matters most, they need Jamal Murray to be the dog that he was for several different playoffs that won them a championship and in the bubble. That guy has completely disappeared. And Michael Porter Jr., I think that they need to still make a move. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, and you know, I don't know, maybe it's dangling Michael Porter Jr. or whoever, but I think that this team is still missing something out of that identity that they've lost in losing KCP, just losing that defensive identity. Like, I think their defense is still suspect. So until they can address and get somebody that can really fill in on the defensive end, I'm not hitching my wagon to the Denver Nuggets actually being a legitimate threat in the Western Conference this year.
No, I'll take it a step further, and this is probably me with my zooming in, zooming out sort of vision. I still say go get Zach LaVine out of Chicago. Like, the reason that the Russell Westbrook thing works for me is because Russ still believes he's the best player on the floor. Russ can say, Nikola Jokic is the best player in the world, but I'm the best player on the floor. He's delusional. Mind you, nobody believes that except for Russell Westbrook. But this team needs someone who believes on a night-to-night basis, or even in a 5-minute stretch, there's not a better player on the floor than me. And that's a guy like Zach LaVine who's confident enough to go out there and do the things and give you this explosion and shoot from distance and catch fire and everything else. Like, they are not a team, in my opinion, that's going to be good enough. I understand why they're looking at Houston, and maybe they're looking at Memphis and saying, in a 7-game series, we can beat them. But you're not beating Oklahoma City as presently constituted. And if it's about getting to the finals and only getting to the finals, then you have to do what you can to beat that team. And I don't think this team as currently constructed can beat Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a healthy Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein, J-Dub, Lou Dort, like everything that they've got going there. Like, that is a well-oiled machine in OKC. We just don't talk about them enough. 15 straight as of today.
I mean, they're the best team in basketball. It's not even close. I think SGA is the guy that I'm
better
like
than Cleveland?
Yeah, they're better than Cleveland. They're better than Cleveland.
That's right now, I was just curious. Hey. Cleveland is 31-4, and they're saying, nobody's talking about us. You're dismissing us, and here you are dismissing Cleveland.
Yeah, give me the best player not named Nikola Jokic right now. It's SGA, and it's not even close. Like, the way that he's... I think that the key point about the Thunder is that they're doing this without Chet Holmgren. Like, when he comes back, this team is going to be so versatile. And, like, even they're getting the bench help. This team is just, I think the chemistry, the coaching, the commitment on both ends of the floor, that this team is, to me, they're the best team in the league. And it's not, I think it's close, but I think Cleveland still has to go through Boston. And I don't know that they've solved that quite yet.
See, if you guys are listening to the podcast, y'all know what I root for in May and June. And it's not hanging out in Cleveland, Oklahoma City, and Boston. Why hast thou forsaken me? But if you're from Cleveland and you're mad at Dan Titus, don't forget to send all of your hate mail to Dan Titus. That's the other black guy on this podcast. Damn, my man. Appreciate you, bro.
Always, Vinny.
And we'll be back with more from The Good Word with The Last Word with Ice Young. Welcome back to The Good Word. It is time for Wednesdays with Ice. Ice Young, thanks for joining us, Ice. Blonde Bombshell, how are you doing today?
Sup, fam. I'm great. Bob is bobbing. Happy New Year to you. It's good to see you.
I know, it's been a while. It's been a while. It's
yeah,
been a while.
It has been. New Year, new me, by the way. I'm looking forward to... Yeah, I'm looking forward to being nicer this year. I feel like throughout the courses of our conversations, I need to soften up a bit, you know, melt the ice. So new year, new me.
That's a conversation for a completely, that's a conversation for the Love Doctor. But we gonna let you ride on that.
By the time we get to the Love Doctor, I'll be mean again.
Yep. It'll be right back to same old me. But Ice, I wanted to bring you on because I feel like you're like the perfect person to talk about Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard has just come back. We haven't seen Kawhi Leonard in literally almost 300 days or somewhere close to that. He's come back. He's on a minutes restriction. He played against Atlanta. He played against Minnesota. You know, when you normally come back, you look a little better on the first night because of adrenaline and everything else. But what's a fair expectation for Kawhi Leonard as he's moving forward from yet another lower leg injury?
Yeah, I mean, one, it's that, you know, now if you've been following the league during his career, this has happened several times, more than several times, of him just being out for an extended period of time and then coming back. And so the expectation is, like he said, preseason, right? I mean, I think for the first 10, 12 games that he's back, it is going to look like a preseason for him, where he shouldn't be playing more than probably 25 minutes. He should make sure that he's starting to get his aggressiveness back, his feel for the game back, his rhythm. You know, in the first two games that he's played, I think that he shot the three like he hasn't missed a beat, which, as someone who's been out from knee injuries, you can still obviously practice your shooting and make sure that your mechanics are all right. It's just all the other things that aren't happening. But I think the expectation is to ease him back into it. And the most important thing is really the confidence piece in his body. At whatever point he feels 100% confident in his body that it can move and defend and score the way in which he wants to, then you start to allow him to unleash and you take him off restrictions. But I don't think for the Clippers, there's any rush to do that. One, they've been playing well without him. And so two, because he's gone through a lot of these injuries before and you know what you can expect, the expectation is to take it slow. I mean, real slow. There's no absolute rush here for him to get back on the court and be aggressive or drop 30 points. The expectation is for him to get his legs back, his confidence back, and his rhythm back on the floor.
It's amazing. I think one of the things that maybe we as a media, we do kind of a disservice when we talk about the athletes, maybe not necessarily from the standpoint of low management, but just from the standpoint of when a player has a knee procedure or any type of, you know, something surgically, that changes you for the rest of your career. Like, you have to adjust after that. And we assume when players come back, they're going to be 100% of the last versions of the player that we saw. And that's never really, like, the case. I don't think we've ever seen, you know, Ice like the Kawhi Leonard since, like, 2017. That was, like, 7, 8 years ago. Like, I don't know what we can expect from someone like him, even though he's a reasonably effective player.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my first thought about him coming back was defensively, right? A two-time defensive player of the year. Like, we know that that is where he can impose his will in games and really make a difference on that side of the basketball. And so in order to play defense and be a terrific defender, you have to trust your body. You've got to trust your reaction time, your anticipation time. And then there's an IQ portion of it as well. It begs the question, especially for Kawhi getting older in his career, you know, do we see his IQ go go up a bit of a notch, right? Or do we see him be a little bit more tactical? Normally, that's a word we use in soccer, like tactically speaking, this is what we need to do. But you might also see him be a bit more of that now because of his body, because of the wear and tear, and not necessarily maybe wanting to be as physical. So I definitely think that he'll still be a physical player, but maybe in the way in which he approaches it defensively could change. And again, I mean, the Clippers, they're fourth in defensive rating in the league right now. And so it's a team that has already got that basis without him. And so he enters that. And as long as he's trusting his body, I expect for that to improve. But on the other side, offensively, remember you and I having this conversation at the beginning of the season about Ant Edwards and how Ant Edwards was using his three a little bit more to set up his game. And you felt like, you know, he's a downhill guy. That's got to be the first thing that sets up his game. I think we may see that with Kawhi is kind of approaching an older man's game where maybe the catch and shoot three is really what he wants to get to and really what they want to use to set up his game. Maybe we're going to see him less posting up one-on-one because, again, of the physical battle and the wear and tear on your body. I'm not saying he'll never do it, but I think that the ratios will be a little bit different if he wants to stay on the floor and have a little bit more longevity. And so I think maybe his approach in the game, not necessarily... I do think that he will be able to come back and be as effective with his numbers. I just think it will look different and his style will be a little bit wiser because his body is getting a bit older. And that's what you can expect. We've seen all players at all levels do that. I remember, you know, well, I shouldn't say I remember because I wasn't born or watching then, but Michael Jordan is the easy example of when somebody came back and adapted and changed their game later because of their age. I think we can expect Kawhi to do the same.
Now you just made me feel real old because I don't know which Michael Jordan you were just referring to. I don't know if you're talking about Wizards Michael Jordan or you're talking about Michael Jordan coming back in 1995. I'm not going to say your age.
Either way, the goal was to make you feel old. That was the goal.
I really appreciate this. This is why I really appreciate you. Now, you brought up something, Ice, that I hadn't thought about until just now when you talked about him changing his game. Would you anticipate or would you hope that he plays a little bit more four than 2-3? Because, you know, with the knee, there's a lot of turning your hips and, you know, and shiftiness that you might need if you're playing four. Maybe you're playing against bigger guys where maybe you're not tall, but you have a strength and you can have less wear and tear and torque on your body.
Yeah, I think there is a potential for that to happen, especially with certain matchups. I mean, I think, it can go team to team, but I definitely think that minutes at the four could put him against a matchup in which he doesn't have to use maybe as much lateral speed that you're talking about or really challenge that knee. And I thought about, you know, if I'm someone playing against him, right? That's what I'm going for. People did it to me in my college career when I came back from a second ACL and they saw a big old brace on my right knee. They was like, we're attacking and we're going left towards my knee. Let's see if she can slide and move and change direction. And so I think, too, that there are teams down the stretch, if they're not seeing him be 100% and he's on the floor, that are going to look to attack him and maybe get those matchups. But I think that's a good point, Vince, is that, you know, putting him at the four can allow him to not have the style of game that we're used to him having, but yet he still be effective on both sides of the basketball and possibly be a matchup nightmare for the other teams for guarding him, right?
Yeah, it's going to force you to play small. If yep. he's on the floor, theoretically, yep. it will force you to play small if he's playing, you know, late in games. Now, the Clippers have figured out a way. You mentioned it. Fourth in defensive rating, right outside of the top six in the West with that loss to Minnesota last night. But they got a better record than the Timberwolves. When you look at the Clippers, they're being run almost entirely through James Harden right now. This is not 2017-2018 James Harden. This is not that version of himself. But they found something. I wonder what type of adjustment he's going to have to make as Kawhi's minutes get up and he winds up sliding into maybe a 25 and 30 minute type of guy.
Yeah, that's a good question, because the first thing that came to mind is like, what is James Harden's attitude about that? You know, how is he going to approach that, and how amicable is he going to be, and what that looks like? And we say that may happen where he goes, 25, 30 minutes and his role gets a little bit smaller. But then there's also the opportunity where Kawhi doesn't look like Kawhi for some time. And so maybe that doesn't happen for another 20 games, partner. Then we're in the last third of the season and we're talking about, okay, well, now you need to do what has gotten you to this point, which hopefully, for this team, it's in a top seven position on the West and they're winning. And so I feel like James Harden, I think we'll have less to worry about. I think it's more the approach of when Kawhi comes back and as he's coming back to look like himself, what position and role does he take on? What is he feeling comfortable with? What's easiest for him to get back to doing? Not sure if it'll be much of a change for James Harden. And especially again with how they've been playing with this system, kind of like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yes, we're adding somebody that's great on both sides of the basketball. And yes, you need his production on both sides of the basketball. And I think they can easily figure out a way to do that. Again, I think the key is going to be making sure that Kawhi's three is consistent and that can become something that they really focus on, in terms of feeding him and getting him his touches and stretching the floor a little bit more. That's only going to allow James Harden to do more of what he wants to do as well. But I think it's a great opportunity for this team with all the pieces that they've built and the leadership that Kawhi brings to really get him back. And again, hopefully he's healthy and he's looking like himself and he's in rhythm after about 10 games. And then you can start to really put the pieces together. But I also believe that, James Harden, Kawhi, they have experienced other players being injured, coming back and having to make the things fit. They're experienced in that. So I'm expecting them to be able to figure it out.
It's funny. We don't think of Kawhi as like this sort of what if player. We think of more Derrick Rose, Grant Hill, Penny Hardaway, certain guys like that. He's had so many knee surgeries and procedures over the course of his career. Like even just going back to 2017 when Zsa Zsa Pachulia, stepped on his ankle when they were going against Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. That was game one. They were up like 25 in that game. Wound up getting swept because Kawhi was done with the ankle. The next year, Kawhi, we had the problems with the quad. He barely played. The next year, he gets traded to Toronto. He drags that team to a ring.
Yes.
Essentially on one leg, right?
For real.
Then he goes to the Clippers. He has another knee procedure, I think, in the, not the bubble season, but the season after that, the 2021 season, where he tears his ACL against the Utah Jazz, misses the entire next season, comes back again. Like, we're talking about 3 to 4 major serious knee injuries, and this guy is still arguably maybe one of the 25 greatest players to ever live.
Yeah, it is truly impressive because you think about after every surgery, there's scar tissue. After every surgery, there's that flexibility conversation where is your knee getting to 0 degrees? Can you bend it all the way without there being issues? And then there's swelling that comes up later. I was thinking about this, and if you haven't had surgery before, you don't know, right? You have no idea what it looks like, but the process obviously isn't linear. I mean, there's constant checks and communications after every game, after every practice. Hey, how's the knee feeling? Is there swelling? How much swelling is there? What can we control? What's the therapy needed for today? And so there's a lot that goes into it. Plus, obviously, the mental component of knowing that you've had all these surgeries and all this work done and your body's only getting older. You're only putting more miles onto it. And how quickly can you bounce back? We make fun of, I shouldn't say we. I do. I make fun of load management all the time, right? It's just a hard concept for me to understand. You want to see your players play and you want people to do their job, which is to get on the court and play. But for him, it's obviously something that you can't ignore. And it's so crucial. So the balance, obviously, between mentally wanting to play, but knowing that your body needs to rest, needs to sit, needs to recover. And then knowing that it's inevitable that in this process, you take steps back. It will be inevitable that some point in the season, he'll have to say, okay, I need to sit a few games in a row. I've got to take steps back and reevaluate. And so it's incredibly, honestly, impressive to me that he has been through all of these injuries over a long course of time and still manages every time to come back on the court and be a force. I've been through the two ACL surgeries myself, and like still to this day can't stand at a concert longer than an hour and a half without my knee getting stiff. So I can't imagine what he's possibly going through. But it goes to show you like the fortitude it takes.
Not just that. Ice, you're not going to stand at a concert for longer than an hour and a half, but you would get out here in one of these gyms and give these dudes some work. Like, we ain't going to sit up somewhere and talk about how Ice bases who she's dating based off of how they can handle defending her on her bulky ACL knees. This is what I'm saying. Now, the funny thing you mentioned about Kawhi, I just thought about this as you said it, Ice. We thought he was going to play in the Olympics. Like, when we went to Las Vegas and the USA had their basketball camp and Kawhi was there, we didn't get to see much of him, and he was basically cut after that. But they were walking around telling us, yeah, Kawhi's going to play in the Olympics. And it's January, and he's just out here. They were lying to us. They were lying.
Clearly. Nobody was telling the truth. They were doing that for clicks and whatever else, you know, maybe to get ratings up early. I don't know. But it clearly wasn't the truth. And thank God he rested. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't imagine. Again, we just don't know what that process looks like, but we only know the setbacks that they tell us about, right? The setbacks that are surgeries and literally what setbacks exist that we don't know that he's gone through in his own plan time and time and time again. But it really sounds like, and I'm not surprised at all, like that the organization and the players are so excited to have him back, and there's no rush. There's no pressure. They are allowing it to happen naturally when he's ready and when it's time. And I think throughout the course of this season, that's also something that other teams have to watch out for, is knowing that the Clippers are this good without him. But man, if he happens to get back on the floor and looks even in a 85% version of what we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years, you now have a serious problem on your hands in terms of guarding the Clippers. And you can't prepare for that until it happens. So I also think the element of surprise could be very cool, you know, for this team as well later in the season.
Yeah, because last time we saw Kawhi Leonard with these Clippers, he had Paul George playing next to him. Now there's Norman Powell. It's a completely different dynamic, a completely different archetype of a team. And the Western Conference, short of Oklahoma City, is a bunch of question marks. Houston is really good. Memphis is good. You know, Denver, maybe they're starting to figure it out. But everybody else, I mean, the name brand teams that we've come to expect them to be good have been a bunch of mid. So,
yeah.
Ice, really appreciate you as always. Thanks again. See you next week.
Appreciate you, fam.
Thanks to Dan, Titus, and Ice Young for joining us on today's show. Thanks to producer Joe and the entire team who worked so hard for us behind the scenes on this podcast. I'll be back on Monday with another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.